I'm Vancouver Sun City columnist Dan Fumano, and I'm joined today here in the Sun and Province newsroom by pollster Mario Canseco. He is the president of Research Co., and we are going to be talking about the coming Vancouver election, which is just under 2 months away now. We're here coming into Labor Day weekend, the last part of the summer, and I guess can we expect things to start heating up on the election front after Labor Day weekend, Mario?
Absolutely. I think, one of the problems that we've had over the past couple of months is very high level of undecideds, people who have been away. There's also the fact that the election is happening in October instead of November as it has in the past. So the campaign is going to be significantly shorter. And also the changes to campaign finance regulations. There's going to be a lot of door knocking, not a lot of glossy advertisements or things that we're going to be watching on TV and radio because of the limitations that the campaigns will have. So it's a very short window to get those votes.
And one of the things that is interesting is the rise of, I mean, we've talked before about how many mayoral candidates there are. I think that must make your life kind of difficult as a pollster. I don't know how many mayoral candidates you're going to be including on your next.
Well, this is definitely the largest list that I've ever had.
Ever.
For a poll, ever.
Yeah.
Because, when I've done elections before in cities, you always have perennial candidates who are not going to get to 1% of the vote.
Yeah.
One of the fun
the
ones
Mr.
I remember.
Peanut vote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or when Andrew Cuomo was elected in New York, they had 7 or 8 candidates who you knew weren't going to do very well, including
sure.
The guy from the Rent Is Too Damn High party, who was absolutely fabulous and famous.
Oh, yeah.
And, we knew he wasn't going to get to 3%, but, we had him at 2.5, and that was fine.
He should run Vancouver, where the rent is also
Jamie McMillan,
quite damn high.
Maybe he could. Well, I don't think he'll meet the residency requirements for this one, but, there's always
next time. But with this high number, Vancouver civic politics has been dominated historically for several decades by a couple of big parties, right? The MPA, for most of its 80-year existence, has kind of run City Hall. More recently, you've got COPE and then Vision, sort of an offshoot of COPE, have won 4 of the last 5 elections. So for most of Vancouver's history, there's a small number of parties that have kind of dominated civic politics. And I think it's been 30 years since we had an independent mayor or an independent councillor. But this time could be different?
I think it will, partly because there's a couple of issues at play. One of them is the absence of an incumbent mayor. It's been fairly simple for Vision to campaign based on what Gregor Robertson was doing after the 2008 election. And it helps also frame the issues. When you have a center-right vote that is going to be going after the MPA and a center-left vote that is usually Vision or COPE if they run a mayoral candidate, then it's a little bit easier to say, well, I like what the mayor's doing and I'm going to stick by his side. And his share of the vote has dropped in every election that he's had, but he still managed to win. But you still have that 45, 46% of residents who will vote for the incumbent. And now that's going to be spread out. Maybe some of them like Shauna Sylvester or Kennedy Stewart or Ian Campbell. So it's a tricky situation for that center-left vote. I think, we had discussions a few months ago about uniting the center-right. And now it's about uniting the center-left. Now, that being said, when you have so many candidates who are credible and well-known, nobody wants to drop out because everybody thinks they can get to 25% or 27% and win the election. So, I don't foresee a lot of people deciding not to put their name forward when we finally announce the candidacies. That's definitely going to be a challenge.
Yeah, I think the official nomination period, is kind of the first 2 weeks of September. So they'll start accepting formal application packages. And so by September 14th, I think, or so, that's when we're going to know who officially is in the race for mayor and for council and park board and school board. But if you had to guess now, you don't think any of these folks look like they're about to drop out?
Not at this stage. Yeah. I think, part of it has to do with the opportunity to actually win. Now, there's nothing there that says that you can't drop out afterwards. Like what we saw in the last election where Casting decided to endorse Kirk LaPointe. Yeah. Even though his name was already in the ballot.
He was running as an independent, I think, and he shortly before Election Day dropped out and said, I want to throw his support behind Lapointe because he specifically wanted to beat Robertson. But as I recall, I think Kasich still got a few thousand votes.
Yeah, he had about 1.2% or something. I remember that, you know, people maybe were forgetful or they didn't realize or they didn't get the message, which is fine. I mean, it's one of those confusions that can happen. But ultimately, I think part of the difficulty for the independents, particularly those who are running for mayor as independents, Kennedy Stewart and Shona Sylvester, you need to build the aura that you can work with anything that council sends you. It's not going to be the same type of campaign where the MPA mayoral candidate asks you to vote for the full slate. Yeah. Same situation that happens with Vision. To a lesser extent, same situation that happens with COPE when they're competitive in the races. It's a different kind of mentality. And what we've seen from residents is they want to see a council that has broad representation. They want to see people from different parts of the city, different walks of life, different political parties. I think there's definitely a sense of tiredness from having one single party dominating everything. And that definitely plays a role. Now, how do you spread that vote around? If you want to vote for a couple of MPA, a couple of Greens, a couple of Visions, the fact that the MPA is running 9 council candidates, I think, does not vote favorably for them because that spreads the vote. I mean, if you're a hardcore MPA voter, yes, you'll vote for all 9 of them and maybe give your 10th vote to the Greens or something. Yeah. But if you are somebody who's voting for other sources and are looking into a couple of NPA candidates to balance it out, you might be spreading that vote thin.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you mentioned, historically, you know, say the last election, if you were going to vote for Robertson, he's got sort of a slate of councillors running with him. And you probably vote for all or most of those Vision councillors. Conversely, if you had voted for Kirk Lapointe, the NPA mayoral candidate last time around, you were probably going to vote for all or most of those NPA council candidates. This time, there's at least 2 pretty high-profile mayoral candidates who are independent. So they don't have a slate of councillors. And if, you know, a few thousand people or tens of thousands of people vote for Stewart, Kennedy Stewart, and Shauna Sylvester, those council votes are kind of unaffiliated or they're free. So where are they going to go? I mean, are they going to go to some of these independent council candidates? Are they going to be spread out among various parties? What's going to happen? What does that mean?
Well, I think definitely if you're looking for an independent candidate for mayor, you would be more likely to consider independent candidates for council. And there's definitely people there with a high profile. I mean, Erin Shum is very well known. Mm-hmm. She was a member of the MPA.
I think it was just yesterday that she announced, so just this week. Yeah,
she's announced that she's going as an independent. Yep. Adrian Crook's very well known as well. Yep. Many of these candidates have a profile that they built not through politics. You know, he's had his 5 Kids, 1 Condo blog that is hilarious and a lot of people enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's one way in which you can build that candidate profile. Mm-hmm. In a different way, I guess similar to what Shona has done with her work at SFU, and you know, Kennedy was an academic, was an NDP member of a parliament. So there's definitely a sense of let's bring people who have been involved in politics from the outside and see what can happen. So I do think that, you know, I'm not certain that we'll have an independent councillor necessarily, but if you're voting for an independent candidate and you have those independent candidates for mayor so high, then you're very likely to also be looking into independent candidates for council as well.
Yeah, I mean, how likely do you think it is that we'll have at least one independent councillor getting a spot?
You know, I think it really depends on the way in which the campaign works. And it's a lot tougher for independent council candidates because they have to knock on more doors. They have fewer resources at their disposal. There's definitely credible people. Sarah Blyth, for instance, was very well known. It begs the question of if we have a system, and I know this is going to sound terrible, but like the system that Doug Ford has sort of put into Toronto, where you have the federal ridings or a province-wide ridings working as wards, it would be a little bit easier. You know, maybe you run a candidate who is very popular in the downtown area and a candidate who's very popular on the west side or the east side, and you start to play around with that a little bit. Because it's a tough one. I mean, we do get 10 votes, but judging by the amount of candidates that we're going to have on the ballot, which is going to be a pretty hefty ballot when you think about it, it's going to be tough. And I think, you know, part of the situation is, what type of council do you want? Is it a situation where your hardcore NPA voter or your hardcore vision voter are just going to go full slate, and then maybe a couple of Greens, a couple of Independents? Or are we going to have a more informed electorate that is going to go, well, I like what this person is saying about this particular issue, and I want to be represented by them this way?
And so, looking ahead, if we do get a situation where you've got an unprecedented kind of diversity on council, let's say you've got an independent mayor and then a couple of Green councillors, maybe a couple of MPA, a couple of Vision, one or two from one city, COPE, and then maybe one or two others, maybe someone from Yes Vancouver. There's so many options now, Pro Vancouver, Coalition Vancouver. There are so many options. Who knows? And then maybe a few independents. What kind of council, like, is that going to work? I think it's been, I don't know when the last time that one party didn't have a majority on council.
No, we would have to go back a long time.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it's a completely different ballgame now. I think part of the situation is we are paying more attention to municipal politics than ever before, at least judging by the amount of coverage that I've seen since I've been here in the city.
Yeah.
It was very different back in 2002, back in 2005. Also, the level of participation from the voters was lower. So we're starting to see that trend of more people voting in the election, more attention being paid to the issues. So that definitely could suggest that, you know, people will be ready for a change. But we haven't had a mayor in a big city in Canada elected with less than 40% of the vote in a long time. I mean, the closest we would have would be Montreal, but that was a completely different situation a couple of years ago. And this is different. You know, we could have a situation where the mayor is not necessarily going to be revered by what he's doing, because if you win an election where 3 out of 4 people didn't cast a ballot for you, that's a tough hill to climb.
Yeah. And you may have a situation where the mayor doesn't necessarily have a lot of allies on council. I mean, in our weak mayor system, the mayor is just one vote out of 11 on council. So if you've got a, say, an NPA mayor and then one or two NPA councillors on, and everybody else, you know, is independents or with other parties, that's just one hypothetical example. Is the mayor going to be able to get things done, or is anybody going to be able to get things done if no one has a majority, or are they just going to argue all the time? Or conversely, is it going to be an era of new consensus building, compromise, you know, harmony?
Well, certainly peace. We would hope for the latter, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to have a situation where nothing gets done. But that's also one of the big possibilities of this election. You know, it's definitely changing the way in which we look at things. And oddly enough, we've been talking about the difficulty of talking about electoral reform at the BC-wide level, the notion of every vote counting, the notion of the first-past-the-post system not working for some people or not being, you know, properly represented. This would be a good opportunity to see whether something like that would work. If you have a situation where 4 or 5 different parties, a couple of independents are represented in council, can you find a way to make it work? We've seen this work in Scandinavian countries. You know, no party gets more than 25% of the vote in Finland, but they've never toppled the government because they were mad at each other. Everybody finds a way to work together.
Maybe it's the saunas, Finnish saunas. They're relaxed. They're not going to...
Yeah,
have a
like,
coup.
We'll just wait for the next election. But it's the way in which policy gets done. You know, maybe you get the support of the anti-immigration party for your economic policy and you pass it. And maybe you get the support of your Green party for your environmental policy and it passes. And it's one of the ways in which things can get done. And I think ultimately people would like to see something like that in the city because it's been dominated by one party for such a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like people... voters have less of an appetite for sort of partisan politics at the municipal level or just in general even? But
I think at the municipal level more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, there's this idea, and I think it definitely shows from all sides. I don't think it's necessarily the NPA voter or the Green voter being upset with Vision because they have a majority. It's also, in a way, a criticism of the way in which the NPA operates as well, which is essentially you have 3 people who are usually on side on anything and they vote against, and it just becomes this hassle where situations aren't discussed properly. And it has led to a lot of backlash to people who are very closely related to the city, particularly developers. I mean, the level of dismay that people express about developers is lower than pollsters, I must say. and probably near the level of car salesmen. Like, there's definitely a situation where the resident
just
of the
above
city,
journalists.
No, journalists do much better, much better. But there, it's a situation that definitely has a lot to do with the notion that you're not being consulted, that the decisions have been made, that you know, you call this meeting and you bring in 20 chairs and everybody has their say, and we're very polite and Canadian about it, mm-hmm. and everybody has their turn at the microphone. But the next day, whatever you didn't want to happen is going to happen because mm-hmm. the decision has already been taken. So I think part of the criticism has to do with that, the way in which the city has engaged with the community for all of these projects.
Even supporters of Gregor Robertson and Vision have pointed out that criticism. I remember the day that Robertson announced he wasn't going to run for re-election, I was doing a story about it, and I talked to Mike Harcourt, former mayor and then later premier of BC, who was a sort of an advisor and supporter of Robertson, especially early on. And Harcourt was largely complimentary of Robertson's legacy. He said it was great, but he said the one kind of the Achilles heel of this Vision Council over the last decade has been, whether real or perceived, this idea that they didn't care about consultation, about what people said. They'd already made up their mind and they were going to do what they were going to do. And Harcourt, who again was largely was really supportive of Robertson and said he thinks he'll have a good legacy. But he said there was this one example where public hearings about a specific bike lane. It might have been the Hornby bike lane or
it
something.
It was the Hornby bike lane.
Public hearings went late into the night, and they heard from all these people, impassioned business owners, residents, and they said everything they had to say, and then everyone listened. As you said, they were very polite and Canadian, and then the council voted along party lines, and supposedly the construction equipment was on the – and this vote happened at like 2 a.m. or something. But the construction equipment was on the street at 6 a.m. the next day tearing up. So it was a done deal. That was the example that Mike Harcourt gave me, and I thought it was pretty interesting, again, because he was still a big supporter of Robertson. But so there is that perception. And I guess if you haven't already had it – if you do have a system going forward after October where – we've got a bunch of different councillors with different affiliations on council, then it's going to be maybe different. They're not going to be having a caucus meeting beforehand where they decide how they're going to vote no matter what they hear and what happens. So is that going to be difficult for, say, lobbying groups or advocacy groups or developers to get the ear of City Hall to try to get things done? Are they going to have 10 different meetings?
It's definitely going to be more challenging. I mean, trying to steer policy through, trying to discuss what needs to happen. Ultimately, I think it would work well for the city, whoever is governing it and whoever is controlling, to actually talk to people. I think we've seen a few examples of decisions that are made quite hastily, not only in the city. I mean, looking into the situation in Victoria with the John McDonald statue. Mm-hmm. It's something that happens because, you know, well, councillors want this to happen. Well, did you consult? Yeah. Did you talk to people? Considering that you're in a city where there's a high number of retirees who tend to be mm-hmm. more conservative, who don't like to mess with historical stuff.
And then now, just weeks after this decision was hastily made in council, Victoria Mayor Lisa Helps has had to come out and apologize for it and acknowledged that this maybe wasn't done the right way. Maybe not the position she wants to be in 2 months before an election where she's running for re-election.
Well, part of it is when you make decisions like that, and I think, you know, what happened with the Hornby bike lane, it was almost interpreted as a vendetta. You know,
yeah.
Here we are and we're going to tear this apart and we're going to have these bikes here. And even though we heard that this is detrimental to the people who need a place to park their cars, when you act that way, and when you take advantage of your majority in that way, it smacks of vengeance. You know, people get really upset with the fact that you're doing things this way. Obviously, you're not going to convince everybody that what you need to do has to happen. Mm-hmm. But we have tools at our disposal that can allow you to have that level of proper consultation that needs to be done. And if we have a council where nobody has a majority, then that's going to be even more important. And, you know, if you thought council meetings were lengthy and difficult, get ready, because now you're going to have three or four people with very different mindsets talking about things instead of just two groups that are fighting each other with the green sort of in the middle.
Yeah. I wonder what that is going to look like.
It's going to be long.
Yeah.
I feel for you. You're going to be out of there at 3 a.m.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as the strategies for these independent council candidates and mayoral candidates, but especially with the council candidates, you know, we talk about Shauna Sylvester. At one time, early on after Robertson announced he wasn't running for re-election, there was chatter, there were rumors that maybe Shauna Sylvester might run for Vision. And now when she did come out as a candidate, She was an independent and she sort of took steps to distance herself. She said, yes, she used to be on the board of Vision, but she is definitely an independent. She's a solid independent. Kennedy Stewart, similarly, there were maybe rumblings. Was he going to run as an independent or run for Vision? He said he definitely wanted to run as an independent. And then on council, we mentioned briefly Adrian Crook, who already has something of a profile. Wade Grant, similarly, he was an elected councillor with the Musqueam Nation and has a profile. Aaron Shum. These are people who we thought may have run for one party or another. Sarah Blythe had previously been a park board commissioner with Vision, but she's decided to run as an independent. And then Rob McDowell. And I'm not sure, he ran as a council candidate with the MPA last time around. This time he's not on the MPA slate. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, and I'd like to try to find out more. So I don't know if it was his decision or theirs. With Crook and Grant specifically, they wanted to run with the NPA when Bremner was vying for the mayoral nomination. They publicly kind of disavowed the NPA and said they weren't. We thought maybe they were going to run with Bremner's new upstart party, which was eventually called Yes Vancouver. Then I guess they weren't on the slate when that was unveiled. And now we're expecting any minute now, maybe some more announcements from them. But I guess the question is, why do you think these reasonably high profile candidates who seem like they should be good candidates, why are they choosing to run as independents? At least some of them, it seems to be their own choice. Is there some kind of advantage to being an independent as opposed to being aligned with a party, especially in 2018 in this new landscape?
I think there is. That is one of the reasons why they've decided to do this way.
Yeah.
It might be more detrimental to run as somebody who belongs to a party at this particular stage because of the animosity that has been expressed to the way the two-party system has operated in the city for such a long time. But the other problem is maybe you have a couple of really credible independents and you think about them if you're a party voter. But when you have so many, I mean, all the names you put together, that could be its own political party right there. We'll call it the Party of Independence or whatever. You could do something like that. And I think part of the difficulty there is how do you connect in that way? And obviously, there's going to be a decision for the voters. There might be somebody who votes for all independents and Greens, or you gave a couple of votes to somebody who you know and trust. But it's a tougher situation because you have so many candidates and there's only 10 spaces. So it's a challenge. I think they like their chances. I don't think they would do it necessarily if they didn't think they could win. But you got to factor in the arithmetic here. You have so many credible independent candidates. Are you going to have more independents and maybe a couple of Greens and maybe a couple of Vision and MPA? And you're starting to run out of places in the council. So it's tough at this stage to really figure it out. The other thing that could happen would be a kind of quasi-endorsement from council candidates to some of the mayoral candidates. Somebody who runs as an independent for council saying, well, I'm not going to endorse anybody. I'm not part of a political party, but I really think you should vote for this particular person. Or maybe the independents endorsing either Kennedy Stewart or Shona Sylvester and saying, I think he or she has the best plans for the city, and that's the way it'll be. Anything can happen. I mean, we still have a few weeks to go.
Anything can happen. Have you seen any polling numbers on council specifically, or just mayoral?
I've been asking about council, mostly about the kind of situation that you have and the views that you have of the political parties. The Greens do remarkably well. I think that's definitely a situation that bodes well for them. I don't think Adrian Carr will have any difficulty trying to get elected again. She was a top vote getter the last time. She was very popular. People wanted to see her run for mayor. So now whether that actually translates into more seats for the Greens is still up for debate.
They're running four council candidates. Do you think that's maybe, are they pushing their luck or?
Well, last time around, what happened is they ran three.
Yeah.
And there were votes that maybe could have gone to one of the two candidates who didn't finish in the top 10.
Yeah. Adrian told me after the fact that they acknowledged it was a mistake. She told me she thinks if they had run two candidates, they would have elected two, but they ran three and only got one in. This time, though, they're taking it another step.
Yeah, they want more.
They're liking their chances.
They like their chances. Well, I think it definitely works in their favor. Because you could assume that the independent voter, if you're voting for Stewart or for Shauna Sylvester, you're probably looking at the Greens as the party that you would support.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily on environmental issues, but because, you know, you're not an MPA person. You're not going to vote for Ken Sim. You're not a vision person. You're not going to vote for Ian Campbell. So, hey, let's get one or two or three or four Greens in council. So that could play in their favor. But it's a much tougher situation for the rest of the slate because you do not have a lot of incumbents running. On the MPA side, you have Melissa DeGenova, and that's it.
All by herself.
On Vision, you have Heather Dale, and that's it.
By herself.
So it's not a situation where you can say, well, this is part of what we've done, and this is the vision that we have for the future, or anything of the sort. So that definitely changes the mindset from the voters. It's not as if, oh, I know this person, she's been here or he's been here. Or it's going to be very difficult to try to connect in that way. I mean, obviously, name recognition helps, but it's a completely different ballgame. We've never had so many incumbents, not only in the city of Vancouver, but in other places, saying, I don't want to do this again.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that's a result of the recent change from 3-year terms to 4-year terms?
Definitely. I think that plays a role. It's a big commitment, particularly for people who cannot get by on the salary of a city councilor. I mean, we have to admit it.
Yeah.
It's a situation that is not that attractive. And, you know, you could do that sacrifice and work for your city for 3 years, but doing it for 4. And the other thing that changes is campaign regulations. You know, maybe you were used to campaigns that were bankrolled by corporate and union donations, where there was always pizza and there was always coffee and your door knockers were always replenished with Gatorade or whatever it was. Those days are gone.
Yeah.
It's now going to be a very different campaign than the ones in the past.
Yeah. Okay, great. Any other thoughts? As we head into Labor Day weekend?
Well, what I'm hoping to see is a little bit of a drop in the undecideds. I think that's been one of the problems.
What was it the last time?
35%.
35%.
So you still have around a third of people who...
Yeah.
And it's not just that they don't know who they're supporting. I think there's also a little bit of a tentative vote right now because nobody knows what the actual slate is going to be like. Maybe you want to vote for Ian Campbell, but if it's a situation where you could also vote for Shauna Sylvester or for Kennedy Stewart, or maybe you're somebody who right now is supporting Hector Bremner, but maybe if you see that the campaign hasn't generated any momentum, you're going to move to somebody different, mm-hmm. maybe Ken Sim. Or what's going to happen with Wai Young and the anti-bike lane vote? I mean, there's so many issues at play. And
now there's Fred Harding, a newish candidate who's just announced earlier this month, and he's running with the Vancouver First Party, and he's got quite a credible background, right? You would think he would make a desirable candidate for a lot of parties. He's a longtime police officer who's retired.
Absolutely. No, this is what makes this interesting. You know, it's not like we're talking about your perennial candidates who run all the time because they want to. And it's even crazier in Toronto. I mean, Toronto, they have right now like 40 candidates who are just there to see if their family votes for them.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, everybody has the right to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
But this is different. I mean, these are people who are definitely credible, people who are well known in the community.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we have the situation that we have right now where nobody can get to 30%.
Do you think this will just be the new reality going forward where maybe the parties aren't as dominant? There's more space for both, you know, upstart parties like Pro Vancouver, Yes Vancouver, Coalition Vancouver, other things that might have Vancouver in their name. is there going to be a space for more of those as well as more independents? Or do you think that this is just because the campaign finance regulation is so new and it's also coming off the tail of this first 4-year term where a lot of incumbents are maybe stepping back? Is this kind of just a perfect storm? This year will be different, and then eventually later on, the parties will kind of reestablish themselves and their importance?
Well, it is a perfect storm. But I think if it works out well with a mixed council and everybody just voting on issues every time and maybe the Greens supporting some things and that probably they wouldn't have supported or the MPA voting in favor of something that Vision wants – if it works well and everybody can do it Scandinavian style, then that'll be the new normal. If nothing gets done, if we wind up in a situation where, you know, things aren't happening, development has been stalled, there's problems with housing, people continue to be worried. Let's hope not, but there's a couple of work stoppages even.
Yeah.
Then it's, okay, forget it. I just want somebody to have as many seats as they can and just run the show. So it's up to them to make it work if that's the case.
Interesting. I guess we'll see what will happen.
We shall.
Okay. Thanks for your time, Mario.
Anytime. Thanks, then.
Thank you.